Yeah, that is Darius at the Elephant. Part of the conversations we do revolves around conversations that are happening in the country. So I noticed yesterday was World Ocean Day.
Thank you very much. I'm Michael Mongombe, and I work with Water Marine Association Program. We mainly do dolphin and whale research, and also looking at how can we better improve marine.
Yesterday was World Oceans Day, and of course, that has huge implications across so many things. What is the scope of the marine conservation conversation? What's the scope of it, and generally, what does it entail for you and your team?
So, Water Marine Association Marine Mammal Program, because Water Marine Association has two components, one that deals with marine mammals, and the other components deals with waste management, but I can't really talk much about waste management because I've been involved by that on that program. But on the marine mammal side, this program has been running since 2010, and it was initially created to much understand what were the type of animals that we're seeing in Batam and identifying different marine mammal species that were here. So we started initially just going out and doing normal surveys, photographing different kinds of dolphins that we were seeing out there and whales as well. And then over time, we started expanding more into looking much about whales in depth, understanding more of a bigger distribution coastwide, and even trying to answer question like, where do these whales come from and where do they go? Because we usually have a whale migration that usually happens between July all the way to September. So over time, this has been, especially with the whales, has been quite a fascinating concept, because it has to, we have the twin migration, whereby during the time we have the whale-based migration simultaneously, we have the humpback whale migration happening at our coastlines. And this creates a kind of an opportunity where someone could be in Masai Mara watching the whale beast, but then as well as they can come down to coast and watch the whales. Then beyond that, we have been more focused in looking at health aspects, including how or what are the effects that this marine mammal experience. So, for example, we do get dead animals, and we try to do necropsies, which are like autopsies, to try and identify what are the causes of death. And again, go beyond that and look at, are these causes of death, are they something that can be transmittable between animals to humans, or even humans to animals and vice versa, so that you can much improve or share better knowledge, especially when it comes to bushmeat.
Yesterday being World Oceans Day, within that scope of, you know, research and trying to, you know, sort of map the ecological trends and you know, marine trends that go with it, what have been some of the big interesting issues that have happened within that 2010 to 2020, basically, wind, and how does that fit in with your goal as a team?
Okay, what we've observed between 2010 to currently, there have been quite a lot of progresses in between, because initially we were just looking at one small area, and that was Watam. But then starting in 2011, we had a new platform that was created, which was the Kenya Marine Mammal Network. And this platform encompassed government agencies, NGOs, and local stakeholders, whereby they would contribute sightings of marine mammals across different places in Kenya. And through that, we've been able to collect data that helped us identify that we had 24 species of marine mammals. This is a combination of whales and dolphins. And then also using this information, it's helped much enhance dolphin watching and whale watching as well. So people could really have enough information that they could provide to about what marine mammals are and what are the threats these animals experience. And also through enhanced marketing and enhanced information, that really helped reduce some of the pressures that otherwise these animals would have been experiencing. And you can get this, for example, if people are not informed at the cost of the animals, but then here now you have a scenario whereby it's a win-win, but then as well as for the animals, they don't experience the pressure that would have otherwise come into place if maybe, you know, that information wasn't there. And as time went by, also we have been getting much interesting thing. And for us, one of the biggest achievement was being able to record the calls of these animals underwater. So we could hear whales singing and again, this helps us get a bigger context on how do these animals utilize this area. Because before that, maybe, you know, we would have seen an animal in an area, and then if it's not sighted again, you'll just go into a perception whereby like, okay, this animal has been sighted here and maybe it's not living here. But now using acoustic recording, whereby you are recording these animals in 24 hours, you can be able to know when are they seeing during the day, like are they present more during the day or during the night, and also how long do they stay here? Do they stay here for a day, a week, or even a month? And combination of all this information, it helps quite in better management, but then again, reducing conflicts that would have arisen from utilization of the same resource at the same time.
Speaking of some of the what you've mentioned, the orca and the humpback whales, and just thinking about what is in essence our relation with them, and I know you've touched a bit on that, just how have we evolved in our reaction, our relation to them. And here I'm thinking of the bigger picture in the coastal community. We're talking about coming up with the Lamu Port. We're talking about increased, human-wildlife interaction with these animals. We're talking about major developments we are doing at the coastal area. Of course, in what ways have you noticed in the evolution, or have you anticipated this evolution in this relationship between us human beings and these, basically marine life in general?
One thing that led us to start now working more on acoustics, and this is using acoustic loggers, deploying them out in the ocean and living there for an extended period of time, and then that this could be up to 3 months. It's helped us much get a bigger context of what are the relations that are out there between the animals and the activities that are happening. And using, currently we are still at the more at phase one, whereby we are working on a smaller area and collecting as much details, trying to understand what can we learn from this area using these devices. And in future, we intend to now spread that same context coastwide to much get a bigger picture of how are these developments impacting marine mammals. Because as much as you could visually see it, but then a lot of it again is just as the way we talk about air pollution, or we talk about noise pollution on the land, the same aspect is applicable in the ocean. So whereby we have noise pollution, and most of these activities, they could either produce toxic or waste that can flow into the ocean, but then as well as they might be producing noise that can be impactful to these animals. Soon enough, we'll be following up to try and understand much the concept of noise pollution in relation to how does it affect these animals. Another aspect of our relationship with the marine mammals, in coastal towns, the relationship between marine mammals and humans has existed for quite a longer time. But then of recent, we have been getting cases of whereby some, especially for the example whales, they will be entangled in fishing gears. So here you see there is a challenge of whale has been entangled in a fishing gear, and this is a fisherman losing, you know, their gear, but as well as an animal which is being impacted. And through that knowledge that we got in 2019, we were able to collaboratively work with fisheries in training fishermen on how they could safely disentangle or deal with these cases when they arise. So fishermen could use safer ways of making sure that they can retrieve the gears, but then as well as making sure that the health of the animal is okay.
Oh, interesting. I mean, just still on that conversation on marine pollution, so to speak, how widespread is it contributing to this impact on marine life?
Talking from an economy point of view, it's a debatable context, but then there are ways on how economy can be enhanced to make sure it's sustainable even for the marine life. And a good example is, for example, in areas where you have a good population of dolphins, instead of maybe looking at exploiting the areas in terms of looking at what are the minerals that you can get in the area, or how can we utilize this area. You can just create a simple thing as ecotourism. When well done, it can help the communities grow, but then as well as it can make sure there isn't that pressure to go for things that maybe they would have had a long-term impact. Like, for example, if we look at oil and gas exploration, it can be, for example, if a leakage comes out, you know, and there can be quite a good lesson that you can learn from the Deep Horizon case, you know, whereby there was this huge oil spill and it had quite big effects on, you know, marine life. And it's through learning from these cases, you know, we could try to look at how can we use the simplest resources that we have, you know, to create things that might not have such a bigger impact in future for the sake of economy.
You mentioned about 20 pieces of the whales. I mean, you mentioned quite a number of animals cover that the scope of your work covers. Could you take us through that?
Okay, so we have identified 24 species of marine mammals. This is a combination of whales and dolphins. And this has been thanks to the Kenya Marine Mammal Network, which is a citizen science platform that has been contributing information from different parts of coastwide, whereby we have fishermen who have been reporting sightings that they've been even seeing offshore. And through compiling all this data, it's made it much easier for us to know what is distributed where. And the most interesting one, to my point, I would say is I never knew like we had killer whales. And
oh, really?
But unfortunately, you know, they were reported by fishermen even sending videos, because we usually need videos or pictures as a proof to show to be mm-hmm. Yeah. And then also we've had reports of blue whales, which are the biggest mammals on earth as well. So this is, you know, interesting that we have all these species in our water.
So you're walking me through that bit about the marine life and the marine mammals, basically, which are within the scope of what you cover, accumulating basically proof of the existence of this species.
So up to date, we've identified 24 species of marine mammal, and this has been thanks to the Kenya Marine Mammal Network platform. And this is whereby we had quite a lot of you know, sports fishermen who are out there fishing all year round and, you know, contributing the data of the sightings that they were seeing. And some of the most exciting sights we have, you know, been able to get even from fishermen was about killer whales, because I even never knew that they were even passing through our waters. But then we got those reports and even pictures and videos, because to be able to fully verify that whatever was sighted was true, we usually need fishermen to tell us the sighting, but as well as contribute the GPS location, pictures or video of what they were seeing. And then also another quite exciting sighting was of the blue whales, which are the biggest mammals. So this shows, you know, quite a richness of marine mammals that we have in our Kenyan waters. The ones that are commonly seen are inshore. We have the Indo-Pacific bottlenose dolphin, and these are the ones that usually people, you know, come down to coast to watch them during dolphin watching tours. But as well as we have the Indian Ocean humpback dolphins, and these are currently endangered, and they are also a bit elusive and shy. So they're not as easy to sight them as it would be to see the bottlenose dolphins.
I mean, that's interesting. I'm just thinking, I mean, how much of the younger people are stepping into that space in terms of both creating new knowledge, but also tapping into the institutional knowledge of the researchers who've been in these spaces for a while? How's that working out?
Okay, it really depends with sometimes, you know, the interest and, you know, what someone wants to do. But then looking at, for example, I feel like marine mammal research, it's quite a broad and multidisciplinary field whereby, you know, anyone can really get involved. So necessarily you don't need to be, you know, a scientist. You could be a photographer, a videographer. You could be, interesting enough, a musician. You know, you could be a programmer. So there's quite a big spectrum of things that, you know, one can do into, you know, this field and contribute really meaningful, because it's all about bringing different aspects of, you know, real world, like creating better reporting systems, existing for these animals, like, you know, people can know where they are. And maybe if we talk about maritime, how can this information about the sightings be included into maritime notification? Like, okay, let's say, like the way in road we have zebra crossing, we could have a similar thing in the ocean whereby as you're approaching an area where there's quite a abundant amount of whales being sighted, you know, you can have a system alerting you like, okay, you're getting into a whale area, so watch out as you navigate through this area. And that can be, you know, a combination of whereby you have someone with programming skills, someone with designing skills. And then in like in our day to day, we get to go out in the ocean and photograph these whales and dolphins, take videos as well. And these videos are later used for education purposes, but also some we use them for our records, like observing what other behaviors these animals are doing. Because sometimes when you're out in the field, you have quite a lot of things that you have to advance. But then with your videos, once you get back to the office, you can now sit down and go through the videos, noting down what are some of the things that you might have missed out there, but then they were caught by videos and analyzed through. I think it's one of the most interesting field whereby, you know, whatever skill set you have, you can really fit in well enough and do quite a lot.
So I'm just thinking also going into the future, you've mapped the past 10 years, 2010 to 2020, and there's been all these interesting citations, interesting developments, interesting discoveries. What is your sort of crystal ball? What do you think, you know, lies basically ahead over the next 10 years?
So from what we've learned the past 10 years, we are now at the point whereby we are sitting down, reevaluating our strategies, and then looking at how can we use technology more into helping us gather much in the data that, you know, we didn't have previously. One, already how we are stepping into the future, as you may, you know, say it, is now through use of acoustics. So as we talk now, we have units that are out in the ocean, and these have been deployed since April, you know, so they are there and they'll be running recording all the way till November. And this for the first time will help us, you know, understand better, like how early do we start seeing whales in this area? And through, you know, knowing how early do whales come, that can be one of the things that can be used in a quick way in maybe helping create the hype about whales are coming. So, you know, think well in advance that through this time, you know, whales do start coming through our areas, so people can have that information well in advance. Also looking at, you know, collecting much data so that you can create open source systems where people can, if you're out dolphin watching and maybe there's a pod of animal that has been sighted in one area, instead of everyone going to congregate in there in one area and this can pressure the animals, you can have an alert system whereby, you know, people are contributing the data. But then this data, as it's being contributed, it also goes into notifying people of where these sightings are. So people can really effectively go into areas where the sightings are, and this can reduce pressure into what could have been maybe people to one animal. As well as trying to bring many people on board into what we do, and even create more knowledge, information, and data for future students or future researchers who might be interested to, you know, follow along in our path.
What are some of the, you know, websites, portals, basically spaces and platforms where enthusiasts, students, researchers, just curious explorers are able to, at this point in time, able to get some of this information that you're giving us? Yeah.
All this information is currently being updated on our new website, which is not yet live. But then for the general work of what we do, it can be, all that can be seen in the Watam Marine Association website, but as well as on the Watam Marine Association Facebook page and Twitter account. So we usually have these daily updates onto that. Provide a platform for people to access the data of what we have in our coastline, and also access whale songs, because I'm quite sure that is one of the things maybe a lot of people have add to, you know, documentaries and work that has been done somewhere else. But then now, for the first time, you know, we can relate to what has been collected in Kenyan waters. So we can, you know, we could hear how do our whales in our waters sound.
Yeah, thank you so much. On that note, I'll be able to cap the interview.
And thank you very much too. Thank you.